So I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 18, The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 20. Sarvabhuteshu yenaikam bhavamavya ikshite avivaktam vivakteshu tajjnanam vidhi sattvikam. Sarvabhuteshu, in all living entities, yena, by which, ekam, one, bhavam, situation, avyayam, imperishable, ikshite, one sees, avivaktam, undivided, vivakteshu, in the numberless and divided, tat, that, jnanam, knowledge, vidi, know, satvikam, in the mode of goodness. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. That knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. Srila Prabhupada's purport. A person who sees one spirit soul in every living being, whether a demigod, human being, animal, bird, beast, aquatic, or plant, or mosquito, possesses knowledge in the mode of goodness. In all living entities, one spirit soul is there, although they have different bodies in terms of their previous work. As described in the seventh chapter, the manifestation of living force in every body is due to the superior nature of the Supreme Lord. Thus, to see that one superior nature, that living force in every body, is to see in the mode of goodness. That living entity is imperishable, although the bodies are perishable. Differences are perceived in terms of the body, because there are many forms of material existence in conditional life. The living force appears to be divided. Such impersonal knowledge is an aspect of self-realization. So the text again, Sarvabhuteshu yenaikam bhavamavyam ikshite avivaktam vivakteshu tajjnanam vidhi sattvikam. That knowledge by which undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. You can use a pillow, by the way. Yes. One of the rules in deity worship is that you're supposed to sit on a pillow. Isn't that nice? It's a nice rule. So here it mentions one of the most important themes of the Bhagavad Gita. After all, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna in detail about knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower. Tadgyanam vidhi rajasam. Oh, in the previous verse, Krishna had said, Jnanam karma chakarta cha chivida gunabedita prochite guna sankhyane tavats chenutanyapi. So he's going to explain about the different modes of nature, the different types of knowledge, action, the form of activity. And so Krishna starts with knowledge, but he doesn't explain knowledge in terms of the interaction of the material energy. He explains knowledge in terms of understanding how everyone is Krishna's eternal servant, that the same spiritual soul is there in every body. And what we're seeing is not the soul, we're seeing the manifestations of the soul's desires, or what the soul is dovetailing his desires with. Actually, originally the soul has only one desire, to please Krishna, but when he's in contact with the material nature, he gets material desires given to him that he dovetails with. And therefore he appears, sometimes he's good, sometimes he's not so good, and sometimes he's positively bad. Therefore Krishna says, Purusha Prakriti Sohi Vunte Prakriti Janganan Karna Guna Sangosya Sad Asad Yoni Janmasu. Thus the living entities follow their ways of life, enjoying the three modes of material nature. This is due to their association with those modes, and thus meet with both good and evil amongst the various species. In other words, although we're all spiritual beings and by nature full of bliss and full of actual consciousness of reality, somehow or another we find ourselves in this playground of the material nature, full of different kinds of illusions. The basic theme is always the same, that I'm Radha, or I'm Krishna, or I'm Tarzan, or I'm Jane, I'm Mickey Mouse, or I'm Minnie Mouse. The same thing was always there in 8,400,000 species of life. Even amongst the ants is the queen. There's also a king, but he's not very important. No one listens to the king. They all listen to the queen. Amongst the bees, there's the queen. You never hear about the king bee. It's only the queen bee. So for those who are into women's liberation, if you really want to be on top, become a queen bee. Then you're on top. Not only you'll have a few followers, you'll have thousands of followers. And their only business is to make honey for you. Isn't that nice? You're the queen and you're swimming in an ocean of honey. But that's not the aim of life. As explained here, Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini, Shuni Chaiva Swapakecha, Pandita Samadarshanha. That the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with an equal vision the learned and gentle Brahman, the cow, the dog, and the dog eater. In other words, the perfection of life is a feel that everyone is part of the same spiritual family. That to feel, as St. Thomas Aquinas, who was at St. Francis, he was talking about brother, flower, sister, bee. What's that? Yeah, everyone is part of the same spiritual family. So that's a fact. But due to our material vision, we think someone is this and someone is that, someone is the other thing. We make all these differentiations in terms of the material body, which is, according to the Bhagavad Gita, it's like saying someone is different than I am because he has a yellow shirt on and I have an orange shirt on. In other words, these vehicles that we're riding in don't make us any different. In India, probably gives the example, sometimes someone is riding in a very expensive car and there's a rickshaw going by. And the car is going, get out of my way, rickshaw. So he thinks he's the car. And he thinks that this person's low class because he's a rickshaw. He's in a rickshaw. He should move out of the way. So similarly, because we're in a certain body, we think ourselves superior to others. But that only deepens our illusion, because we're not the body. So how, if we're not the body, on what basis do we feel superior because we have a certain kind of body? We're simply a little tiny passenger in this body, and someone's another little tiny passenger in another body. But we're all little tiny passengers in different kinds of bodies. And sometimes we're in this body, maybe we're in the body of Brahma, and sometimes we're in the body of an ant. But we haven't changed, simply the body. Now, when one is in the body of Brahma, he thinks he's the Lord of the universe. And if you're in the body of living in a house, you think you're Lord of the house. And if you're a mouse, you think that you're Lord of the hole in the house. So there's really not much difference between the mentality. And there's really not much difference in the enjoyment either. Although, certainly in the heavenly planets, when they're in the mode of goodness, they're given an opportunity to enjoy without so much suffering. Enjoy means they're able to fulfill their desires without going through so much suffering to do so. The only thing is, they had to work on this planet in order to get there for vacation. And as we all know, vacations don't last very long. As soon as you get a 2-week vacation, I was always looking forward to the summer vacation. And the summer vacation would start and what happened? Where was I? And then the school year would be, and, oh my God. This lasts forever. And, well, finally summer vacation, back to school again. So that's the heavenly planets. The more one is enjoying, the quicker time goes. So that's why we think we're living a long time here on this planet, because we're suffering so much. Every moment goes very slowly, except for the weekend for people who work. So the point is that everyone in the material world is more or less either thinking they're enjoying or thinking they're suffering according to their body, but ultimately it's just a dream. It's going, there's no stability to it. Therefore, even the animals, which have, practically speaking, no responsibility compared to the human beings, even the birds are always looking both ways to see if someone's coming to eat them. As they're eating the poor little worm, they're looking both ways to make sure no one's going to come and eat them. So not a very pleasant existence. Although, if you're a bird, you don't have to worry about going to school. There's no tests as a bird. You don't have to pay mortgage. There's no retirement fund you have to save up for. There's no airport tax you have to pay. There's no landing permit you need. Although there are many terrorists flying around trying to get you. Eagles, vultures. But still the animal life is miserable. And the human form of life, we made all more miserable than the animals are. We made it more complicated. In the name of progress, we made it so complicated that some people are multi-billionaires and they don't know what to do with the money except for trying to figure out how to utilize the money to make everyone else unhappy. Because they worked so hard to lord it over everyone, cheated everyone to get the money. Now that they got the money, the only happiness they can get from it, practically speaking, is making sure that everyone is suffering as much as they are, and anxiety about their money. Imagine if you had a car, you had one car. How much effort you have to put into that car to maintain it? You have to put gas, insurance. You have to clean it. You have to protect it. You have to put it in a garage. You're always afraid someone's going to come and scratch it. So you have one car full of anxiety. And then if you have two cars, you have twice as much anxiety. And if you have money, what can you do with it except for try to keep it from everyone else because everyone else wants to get it from you? For instance, Bhakti Chirita Maharaj said that when he made friends with Muhammad Ali, you heard of Muhammad Ali? Cassius Clay. So Muhammad Ali said, when I was just a regular person, I wasn't so famous, I didn't have any money, no one knew me. I didn't even know. But as soon as I got some money, people, I got relatives from all over the world coming to see me. Suddenly, people I never heard of became my cousin. And they didn't have, you know, they didn't come to serve, you know, please, could I do some service for you? No, suddenly he had to help out all his relatives. So the point is that if you have nothing yet, as then there's nothing to worry about. I remember when I was going to the Iyengar Institute in Pune every day, there were three of us. There was Mahendrapu, if you know who he was, who he is, from Bulgaria. He used to be the principal of the Bhaktivedanta College. And Ridai Chaitanyapru, who was the GBC for Belgium and France and places like that. So every day we'd go to the Iyengar Institute because we had rented an apartment for the month. And on the way we'd pass by people in India who were sleeping on the street in Pune. But they were actually sleeping quite peacefully. They had nothing to worry about because they didn't have to pay the rent there. Didn't have to worry about getting evicted because no one would touch them. And they got food every day. They got their chapatis. What's that? Yeah, I mean, they're still there. They didn't starve to death. Someone must be feeding them. Krishna's feeding them. And they had nothing else to do than sit outside the temples and chant Hare Krishna while everyone else was running around taking pictures. They can actually enjoy Vrindavan. They can actually meditate upon Krishna there, beg for his mercy because they feel dependent on him, and everyone else thinks they're on top of the world. They think they own Vrindavan because they took a picture of it. The conclusion is that one should be satisfied being Krishna's servant. Not a big servant, as one devotee was saying, Prabhupada, how can I become a big devotee? Prabhupada said, don't try to become a big devotee, try to become a devotee. A big devotee doesn't even think they're devotees. They think they're the lowest of the devotees. And the lowest of the devotees, they think they're big devotees. That's the difference between us and God. God here comes to become a servant of God, and we come here to have God serve us. Therefore, this knowledge is important to understand how all living entities are equally Krishna's servants, equally Krishna's sons and daughters eternally, and that as Krishna's servants ourselves, that is our business to serve them. Now, of course, we have hardly any ability to even serve ourselves nowadays because we have no idea what's going on. Even physically or mentally, intellectually, people have no idea what to do. Material world has become so complicated. As soon as you get sick or anything goes wrong with you, immediately you have 15, 20 doctors telling you what to do. Everyone knows exactly what to do to cure you. And if you don't take their advice, they become very disappointed that you fail to love me by taking my advice. And if you take their advice, you'll definitely need another doctor. So everyone more or less is thinking that they're like the center of attention in Kali Yuga, but everything has become so complicated that no one knows what to do. Even the people who are so-called professionals, they have no idea what to do. They say that And the modern medicine, our diagnostic approach, they get it right one out of every three times they get the proper diagnosis with all the machines and everything. In other words, if you flipped a coin, you'd probably have a better chance. Because everything is so complicated. And people have such little knowledge because they have no idea where things came from, how things work, where they came from, where they're going, how to live here. They don't even know, as I stressed before, that you're supposed to wash your hands before you eat. Maybe my grandmother said that, but people... But that was grandmother lived centuries ago. The time when they used to do that when the dinosaurs used to roam. But nowadays people don't take any of these things very seriously. They're convinced that you can do anything you want and the doctors are going to save you. You can act any way you want with people, and as long as you have money in the bank, you're all right, because you can pay for the lawyers. They're so bewildered, they have no idea how the material energies work. They have no idea what the purpose of life is. If there's food on the table and a place to sleep, their life is perfect. You throw in a little sex life, and that's the cherry on the top. Other than that, they have no idea what they're doing. I mean, look at nowadays what the occupation people have. There are so many people working in IT. They're making programs for other people. Is that right? You work in IT? They make programs for other people so they can do what? They can run the business. But what is the business about? It's usually, if the business went out of business, no one would even notice. Because it's become so artificial. There's a few people growing food, and no one even knows how they do it. No one really cares how the food is grown. They don't even know when they're eating something, they don't even know what's in it. You'd have to have a PhD in chemistry to find out what you just ate. And people are proud. They're living in a very advanced civilization and everything is going exactly according to plan. Whose plan they don't know. What the plan is, they don't know. But they're sure it's all going on perfectly according to someone's plan. But how to develop relationships with others who are not only with human beings, I mean, at least human beings would be nice if people had loving relationships with human beings. But if you see down, if you go downtown, any downtown, I mean, Ljubljana is a little bit better. You know, when we go downtown and chant, you can see that sometimes people actually look like they're enjoying themselves, especially when the Harinam goes by. But in many places, you look like everyone looks like they're going to a funeral. That's on vacation. You know, they go on a vacation and someone has a plan. They got to see every single place. They got to visit every single place to get their money's worth. So everyone's running around looking at this place, look at that. But by the time they're done with their vacation, they need another one. They have to see a psychiatrist because they can't sleep at night, remembering all the places they saw. And what do they see? I mean, just like I grew up in New York. And I never went, the only time I ever went to, everyone goes to New York to see all the places. But I never went to any of the places. Because they're all the same. Like one time I went to Machu Picchu. You know where Machu Picchu is? Cusco. I mean, that place is austere. I mean, anyone who goes for vacation, I mean, you must like to... It's like going to a torture chamber for vacation. See how much you can suffer. I lived there for 3 months. And every day you wake up, your bones are cold. It's so cold. You want to set your skin on fire, warm up your bones. And then we got the chance to go to Machu Picchu. Machu Picchu means it's like a 10-hour ride. Because the British built a train to go up to Machu Picchu. The road takes 1 hour to get there. But if you go by train, it takes 10 hours. Because they wanted to make more money by making it wounding around the mountain. So because we didn't have a car, we had to go on this train for 10 hours going around a mountain. Finally get up to the mountain. And what do you see is Machu Picchu, where people spend their whole, you know, their life savings to go and see it for once in their life. And what is it? It's just like a bunch of, you know, stones put together. Most of them are not together. They're just lying around. And you spend an hour there and you got to go back 10 hours. And that's your vacation. Take pictures of the stones. I got up there and we saw the stones. Spent my life savings to see them. Now I can go back. My life was successful. And you go back to Cusco. It's freezing cold. Raining all the time, freezing cold. The whole place is ghostly haunted. And we met with the mayor of Cusco one time. The devotees went to see him. And he told us that Cusco is the center of the universe. And this year we're going to have a Kumbh Mela to celebrate Cusco. So they invite all the people to come to Kumbh Mela in Cusco, because Cusco is now the center of the universe. I don't know, I mean, maybe it is the center of the universe, but it's not a very nice center. I mean, I have nothing against Cusco, it's just that people who live there, because it's high in the mountains, it's like 10,000 meters in the sky. It's about... So it's like, Cusco is not as, La Paz is even higher, which is, you get up there, you can't breathe, because you can breathe, but there's no air to breathe. And the people living there, they have bodies that are square, because they have to have huge lungs in order to take in all the air they can, in order to breathe. But if you're a Westerner, you go there, you have little tiny lungs. You take a breath, nothing goes in. So the point is that in the material world, everyone is looking for something other than a relationship with Krishna, a relationship with everyone else, a loving relationship. But if they have a loving relationship, it doesn't really matter where you are. If you're in Cusco or Machu Picchu or in Slovenia and Ljubljana, everything is nice because you have a nice relationship with all living entities. Everyone is seen in relationship. Krishna is everywhere. And everyone is seen as a loving servant of Krishna. And without that, everything is just a waste of time. It's just a struggle against material nature, which everyone loses. And in the meantime, everyone's struggling with, they think everyone else is the cause of their suffering. What they don't realize is the cause of their suffering is because they think everyone else is the cause of their suffering. Instead of doing something positive, to help others as their natural position, to help others become Krishna conscious, they're struggling with each other over pieces of rock up in Machu Picchu. And so their hearts have become stone-like, worrying over pieces of rock. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. You talked about the struggle. Sometimes devotees or people come to Krishna consciousness and they expect there's no more struggle. So that it seems like sometimes that there's more struggle for the devotees. So, how can you explain this?
Well, that's good, because we're struggling for something very important. Without the struggle, we wouldn't take it very seriously. Because we're struggling for Krishna, the highest goal, therefore the struggle is the most rewarding. People are struggling really hard for something insignificant, and when they get it, they become completely disappointed. But we're struggling for something very significant, and we get it, then we'll be completely satisfied. Like Dhruva Maharaj. Who can struggle like Dhruva Maharaj? He was the great grandson of Lord Brahma. I mean, that's a pretty big family heritage you get. Imagine if you knew that you, in your last lifetime, you were Brahma's son. A little strange because you only had one head, but still, your father was the head of the universe. A pretty prestigious position. So he was the great-grandson of Lord Brahma, and he got insulted, and he wanted to meet Krishna. So he had a struggle. Imagine if you had a 1 month only eat kapita fruit every third day. You'd find it a bit of a struggle. And then the next month you'd look forward to the next month. You'd only eat dry leaves that fell from the tree every sixth day, and pray that it's fall, that the leaves are falling from the trees. Or else it's really be austere. And then the next month, you only drink some water every ninth day. And then the next month after that, you got one breath of air every 12th day. I mean, that would be a struggle, wouldn't it? But at the end, he got Krishna. He met the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he got a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather, Lord Brahma. So is that worth it? So for a big struggle, big sacrifice, you get a big reward also, Krishna. Krishna is not cheap. He's the source of all material and spiritual worlds, and therefore to become qualified to associate with him takes a lot of struggle. But that struggle is very rewarding. And the struggle is really just giving up all the bad habits we have, all the misconceptions and the bad habits that we're attached to. It's a struggle. But it's a worthwhile struggle. Everyone is struggling to become degraded, struggling hard, and we're struggling to become elevated. So, which is a better struggle? We have to struggle in the material world, karshati. We have to choose what kind of struggle we want, either to become elevated or to become degraded. But to become degraded is a really hard struggle, a really very unpleasant struggle. To become elevated, Krishna says, that which in the beginning is bitter like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. So it's a very encouraging struggle. Anything else? Kala Granthara Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.